Empower Radio presents Art as Worship with Vanessa Lowry.
Welcome to Art as Worship. Each week we feature stories of artists and explore their process of creation. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowry, and I am thankful that you are joining me. On this show, I talk with artists of various faiths, working on a wide range of mediums, on the common theme of how they use inspiration and creativity as an expression of their spirituality. Learn how their art is an expression of their own connection to however they name God, Jehovah, Allah, Source, the universe, the great mystery, or something else. My hope is that these stories will inspire your creative efforts and your own spiritual expression. My guest today is Flora Rozevsky, and she is a spiritual collage and mixed media artist. She draws with scissors. Flora loves to cut. She uses an intuitive sense of color and composition like Henri Matisse. She says, "I thrive on the freedom to draw with scissors in a spirit of spontaneity that is so much a part of each new work." Often inspired by her Jewish heritage, Flora's work reflects a very personal and eloquent spirituality with a common thread. Her work is irrepressibly joyful. Her passion for primary hues, textural fabric, paper cutouts, as well as an inventive and surprising use of found materials enlivens each piece. A variety of mediums include needlepoint, applique, mixed media, and stained glass design. Judaic-inspired community quilts Flora designed are in the permanent collections of several Jewish institutions. And there's a number of publications that have reproduced her work, including Hallmark cards. Flora is the current president of the American Guild of Judaic Art. So welcome, Flora. We're so glad to have you with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much for being here. And I know that your bio mentions that you draw with scissors. So can you just explain to us what draws you to that thing of cutting pieces out and putting them together in something new?
Well, I have done other kinds of mediums like painting and sculpture and other things, but I do love the immediate gratification and that instant wow factor when you cut directly into the color. There's something very tactile about it, and I just love, you know, using that technique or that process. It's very exciting. It's a wonderful way to express one's work.
So when you're getting ready to draw with scissors, do you sketch onto whatever you're cutting out?
No, that's a good question. I tried drawing things first and then doing the cutout, and it's very limiting to me. So I just take the scissor and the paper, and just as you would with pencil, I just start cutting and trying to just experiment until it works.
And I know that the examples that you've shown of your art and the examples on your website, there's a lot of color involved. How does color play into that for you?
Color to me is a metaphor for joy, excitement. I mean, there are sometimes I did one piece with the theme of the Holocaust, and that piece was all gray and black, and it did not have color. The absence of color became the metaphor. But for most of my work, if I'm dealing with something joyful, I want that color to express that. In fact, there was one piece I did for the Sabbath bride, that theme of the Sabbath coming in as a bride and a queen. And you normally think of a bride wearing white, and it just didn't work for me. And she turned out to be wearing a lot of red.
Well, and in the Chinese culture, red is what brides wear as
right.
a symbol of good fortune.
Right. So I had that creative, you know, idea. Yesterday there was a show on NPR, by the way, with Kristen Tippett, I think her name was. And she said that Albert Einstein once said, imagination is more important than knowledge. And that creative spirit is inside of each artist, I think, whether you're a writer or a visual artist or a musician, to come up with your own ideas and expression.
So at what point in your life did you start thinking of yourself as an artist?
Well, I think probably when I was a little preschool child, because my mother had a report from the preschool teacher that Flora liked to draw. But when I really thought of myself, calling myself an artist, was probably in my 20s, having four children, and I used to go around with them at the different parks with a lunchbox of magic markers and draw them on the carousels in Binghamton, New York. And then I went to frame them, these little drawings, and the art store owner said, you know, I'd like to have a show of your work. You're an artist. I said, oh, really? This is no longer something I just do. But art is really so much a part of what I am that it took a while for me to realize that this is who I am, the word artist. I am an artist.
Well, and I know that you do a lot of different types of art, and you that your art expresses different things for you. How does your spirituality find expression in your art?
Well, sometimes it's very literal, where the spirituality will come from a Jewish thought or a text or an idea. Then other times it can be a personal experience. There was a piece that I did was an absolute expression of a spiritual encounter I had with God. It was back when I lived in upstate New York, and I created the artwork to go with that experience. It was around the Sukkot time, and it has a story, and the piece is called Personal Miracle.
So can you describe more of that story for us?
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. We had never built a sukkah, which is a little hut, a little booth that you build around that holiday, the fall holiday, to remember the Exodus. And I told my family, I said, you know, I'd like to build one instead of going to the synagogue. Let's have one in our backyard. And everyone thought I was crazy. But I took the Jewish Catalog, which was a book on how to create a sukkah, which was with poles and cinder blocks. And it didn't seem that difficult. So I told my sister-in-law we were going to do this. And every Friday night, she and I used to share Friday night dinners. It would be 1 week at her house, 1 week at my house. And that week, her kids were sick, so it was just us. And it was very raining, and like a day like today, you know, stormy, not tornado warnings, but it was not a good day. But it didn't rain. It was just stormy. And my kids said, Mom, do we have to sit out there? I said, yes. And when you feel the drop of rain, we'll come in the house. But until it rains, until you feel that drop of rain, you just put on the coat. We're sitting out there. We had our dinner. We got through it. It was rain, and it didn't rain, but I called my sister-in-law, and she said, oh, it's too bad you couldn't eat in your sukkah tonight. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, it just poured here in Vestal. She said, didn't it rain in Binghamton? And I said, no, it never rained. So when I told my rabbi the story, he said, Flora, you just experienced a personal miracle.
Oh, wow.
So I felt that God wanted me to have that dinner with my family in the sukkah that I had built. And then I have a drawing, an illustration I did of that experience with the sukkah. When you see it, it has like a bright light inside. And then outside is this stormy kind of feeling around it. So I do have that, and that's on my website. It's called Personal Miracle.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a great story, and mm-hmm. What a very personal way to express your art from that experience.
Right. And that's why I call it Personal Miracle. it was my miracle.
So did your kids think of it as a miracle as well?
Well, I think so. I think that, you know, again, this is maybe, you know, you've probably heard this before, that sometimes coincidences become God's way of remaining anonymous. And I call them signs. You know, sometimes I even ask for a sign. You know, I'll say, well, you know, could you give me a sign to whether to do something or not? And sometimes signs come and go, but we ignore them, or sometimes we embrace them.
So when you ask for a sign, what kinds of things do you look for? Do you have certain ways that signs show up for you? I know different people have different things that they kind of look for as a sign.
Well, you know, of course, we all pray for good health and a good day. And if something is not going your way, you say, you know, could you give me strength? Is there something? And sometimes I will, you know, see a person, let's say in a grocery store, that's in a wheelchair or who is not well or has a real problem. And it says, you know, that makes me grateful that I am really not in a bad place right now. And I have to be thankful for that. So I said, maybe that's a sign that I needed to see that. But that person may be thankful in their way. So sometimes it's very subconscious what those signs are, but they're there. They're out there. Or someone will do me a huge favor and I'll say, you know, you must be sent as an angel. You know, where did you come from? You know,
right.
This kind of thing. Like all of a sudden, like, Vanessa, why did you call me? How did you find me? So maybe you're a sign. I don't know.
Well, and I know, four leaf clovers are a thing in our family that we've always mm-hmm. found four leaf clovers. And so whenever I find one, I always feel like that's a sign that things are going my way.
Yeah, a rainbow is a sign. You know, that is even, I think, in the Torah, I'm not sure, but that was a sign from God to Noah that there would, you know, that he would never destroy the world. And I think we need a lot of rainbows today.
Right, and especially when we've got rainy icky days like today when the sun right. comes out and then all of a sudden you see that.
Right.
That
but
promise.
I mean, it gives you hope. So that's a very powerful sign. But there are other signs that are in nature.
So when you're creating, when you get ready to get into that space of creation, do you have any kind of a process that you go through or a ritual that you go through to connect with that divine flow?
That's a good question. This afternoon when I leave here, I hope to go to my studio to do some creative work. And, you know, I will get myself in a mood. I don't know if I consciously think about it. I do know that when I'm in my studio and I do put on the radio, usually it's NPR, I have to say, and I get into that zone, I call it. It's different than when I'm home. So I don't know. I think being creative, when you're creating something, or if you're gardening, or if you're reading, if you're doing anything you have passion for that you love to do, there's something that time feels differently, and there's something going on. I don't know what it is. Maybe it is this higher power. I don't know, but it's a comforting feeling.
So you have some creating that you do at a separate studio and some creating that you do at your home.
More at the studio.
So
there's a quiet space. I'm also a big believer in finding sanctuary in your life, that you need some quiet space, time to think, reflect. I think artists, you need reflection. You need the ideas. You need time to think, even daydream. That's okay. Sometimes I can be in my studio. I may take out a book or I may do some writing and then do the art. So it's not the same workspace as going to an office, let's say. But I think reflection is important, that we put in that time to reflect.
And I love that you mentioned that, because I think a lot of people get into that mindset of that if they're not doing, it's not productive, that if it's not something that physically they have something to show for, that it's that they're not producing and that they're just goofing off. So I love that you spend some of that time in your studio kind of gathering that
right.
energy to you.
Yeah, Mona Waterhouse is an artist friend of mine. She's originally from Sweden. And she was the one, we had this discussion about ideas. And again, going back to what Einstein said about imagination, is that it's really important to think and to take that time to reflect on what you're trying to say with your work, whatever it is. I also think it's important to make a mistake and to feel free as an artist, that it's okay to fail. That's a huge philosophy that when I teach in schools or I would do residencies and workshops, and I would look at these children, even the teachers, and they would look at me and say, what are you saying? But this is a safe place as an artist that it's okay if I cut the paper and it's wrong, guess what? I can take another piece of paper. It's okay. You don't want to hold back. You don't want to have to be so perfect.
And it's interesting, too, that sometimes those mistakes turn into mm-hmm. something that you didn't expect.
Right.
That might even be better than what you originally intentioned when you started.
Right. That's a very hard concept for people who are very linear or who are very mathematical, who where black is black and white is white. Because as an artist, there can be so many variations and so many answers. And sometimes it's just an intuition when you know it's right. You have to walk away from your piece and say, is it finished? Like when God, when he's after 6 days, he said, okay, the world is now created. I'm done. I need to rest.
So. Well, and I know before we started, you were talking a little bit about a lot of your art has that theme of impermanent. I can't even say that word, but things that are not permanent.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about that and how mm-hmm. that works into your artwork?
Shelter and Sanctuary was a theme I had for a show of mine, Indicator, a few years ago. It was a solo show. And it's a theme that resonates with me personally because we had moved and started a new chapter here in the Atlanta area. And I see this, if you think of Katrina, you think of today's world. I mean, these people that lost their lives, on the ship in near Italy, that life is very fragile. And we cannot get so hung up on our things that we own, that we build with our hands, and that there is this protection above us, or, that we have to live every moment and every day as fully as possible because we don't know what will happen tomorrow. So this whole idea of shelter and sanctuary is a theme that I could probably keep doing for the rest of my life, and it keeps creeping into my work. this whole concept. And through my Jewish heritage, we have the holiday of Sukkot, which is, you know, the Exodus, where it took 40 years of temporary housing or tents, so that creeps into the art, but also in an abstract way as well. You know, this, and I love using, my father-in-law was a, I won't say a collector, we would say a hoarder of stuff. He never threw anything out. He died when he was 98 years old. And I have collections of his paper. We call that ephemera, which is temporary stuff. And I incorporate his things into my art because of that temporary feeling of the paper. And some of my shelter and sanctuary work, I use his work. I hope he's up there looking down and saying, oh my God, what is she doing with my papers? But the family was ready to throw it all away. And I said, you know, I'm an artist, a collage artist. Let me keep it. So my studio, if you come to it, it's, there are a lot of boxes of Grandpa Harry's work. Well, not his work, but his papers.
So do you use it as background or do you use it
both
as pieces?
Yeah, I have journals he wrote. He kept old, you know, telephone directories when he would be selling farmers in upstate New York, you know, cabbage and potato farmers. Bags, you know, for their burlap bags, but he kept everything. He was very organized in his own way, but he never threw things away. He has letters, postcards from my children, from me, stamps that were canceled that the kids used to soak, but I now use them in my my work. There was one, you know, those freebies that people would give to customers, you know, little, you know, holiday gifts.
Right.
One of them was a little philosophy card. It was called Take Time. You know, it was like all these little tidbits. And I used that in one of my pieces. I took the actual piece. So it's kind of fun to use his things in my work.
So you kind of use these objects and then create something mm-hmm. bigger out of them
right.
by incorporating them.
Right. Mm-hmm. But he's a very much a part of my work lately.
Well, and I know you mentioned that you started kind of your work as an artist when you were in your 20s and your kids were small. And I'm not gonna out you with your age, but I know that you've been doing this work for many decades. And
right.
so how has your art affected your spiritual evolution, or how has your spiritual evolution affected your art as you've been working as an artist?
Well, I think as I matured, you know, in my 30s, I then had children almost off to college and high school, which, you know, because back in the 50s and 60s, women didn't have as many choices today. And we had children younger, and although I may have gone to college, I didn't work, quote unquote, out of the home. So I went back to school. I went to the university, Binghamton University. I walked to the college, took the bus home, and enrolled in beginning painting, you know, just because I always liked, quote unquote, art. And I think it was through that journey of going back to school that brought me back to some of my own work, which did not start out being Judaic. But then I started entering competitions and shows, and they would come up with themes. And all of a sudden, I love to read. So it was a combination of maybe being in the right place, and we'll talk about those signs again. You know, maybe the sign was to go back to school, or seeing that ad in a newspaper that said, you know, come back and register and sign up for classes at Binghamton University. So that probably was a big change in my life, and also being affected by professors that I studied with at the university there, and one from Syracuse who was a visiting professor who was wonderful.
Well, and I know that you have done some teaching yourself. Is there any element of that tapping into your spirituality that you try to convey to your students, or that you share with them of how you do that?
Well, if I'm teaching, it depends. It would depend. I would say that a lot of adults particularly, and even some children, you know, the body language is they'll fold their hands like, I'm not going to try this. It's too scary to make that mistake. So if it depends on the program, I may throw out a theme and say, let's take a favorite text and see if you can illustrate it. And it doesn't, you know, using paper cutouts. I've done this with an interfaith group that I belong to. We're different people of different religions took certain texts from their prayer books. And these were non-artists. And they were so excited and so proud of their work. And I said, now you could take it home and put it up on the refrigerator. I think some of them wanted even to frame their work. And this was in a, you know, in a one-hour workshop. But with children, too, the important thing is for me to empower them to create their work. It's not so much about my work, but to give them the freedom to try and to dig deep down in their minds, their ideas. So it's their spirituality and how they connect. But I think that, you know, it's kind of, you've heard this before, that we're each born with certain gifts. And Vanessa, I don't know, I'm sure you have many gifts, or Alan, you have gifts. But my gift probably was that I had a visual art, you know, tendency, or I had this little gift. And maybe I never would have discovered it. I don't know. But again, I was fortunate that I had the university and certain signs, and I took advantage of them. And here I am with lots of grandchildren.
So do your children or your grandchildren, do they do art? Are they artists
themselves? Some of them do. A lot of them do. But I think they're creative thinkers, which I think is important too. You know, you can be creative in many ways.
Right.
So I think they are creative thinkers. And I have a few that are definitely, I think I can see them as visual artists. My second daughter, her career is in the arts, and she went that route. But even those who didn't were so specifically saying they're artists. They like to draw, or read, or write, or they're creative in their own way.
My mom is very creative, and so when I was growing up, we always were around very creative things, and, you know, painting and crafting and doing all kinds of things. And one of my favorite vacations is one that I took with my mom a few years ago, where we went to a art camp for a week.
That's great. Where was it?
It was Wild Acres in North Carolina, and it was such a great experience for she and I to do together. That she's been such an influence on me from a creative, artistic standpoint, and it was fun to, you know, kind of experience that together in an environment that was surrounded by other artists.
Wow, that sounds great. Well, one thing I will tell you, recently when I started a journal idea, which, by the way, non-artists can do this. You don't have to be an artist. And it's a little book that I bought at an art store. And when I go on vacations, I journal each day with art and text as to what happened that day. And now I'm on my third journal. And my grandchildren, they're all coming up to me and saying, Grandma, we want you to live to be, you know, a long life. But when you're not here anymore, could I have that book? And I said, well, I have 7 grandkids. I said, I hope I'll have 7 books.
That's right.
But thank gosh we have, you know, like copy machines, where I think, I don't know what's going to happen. But they're very precious journals. They're very personal. And I document, you know, what we did, and as a family, or who's eating what, and who's doing this, and I sketch them, and I use collage and drawing, and I should have brought it to show you, but they're really fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and non-artists can do that too.
And I, you know, think journaling is such a great way to kind of flesh out your ideas and get things out of your head to see what they look like once they're out of that rumbling around in your head.
Yeah, I usually try to keep my color pencils and pens with me so that spur of the moment, if I'm somewhere, even on a MARTA train, although people may not want me drawing them. But, it's just nice to be able to do that.
Well, and it sounds like you have lots of different ideas as an artist, that you have different ways of expressing your art and have lots of different ideas. How do you decide which ideas you're going to pursue and move forward with?
Good question. You have good questions, Vanessa. That's
Thank
your
you.
Gift to be a good interviewer. I think some of it is driven by the competitions I enter. And that gives me a deadline, a project that I have to finish. That's why I'm going back to my studio today to work on it. So that's one thing. The other, when I'm totally on my own, that's when I may have a solo show. And then it's all me. I can pick out whatever theme I want. And that's a little different. So I think it's a combination. And then we talked about reflection. Sometimes if I don't have those deadlines, but I usually have projects with deadlines, that I would just sit there and say, okay, what do I want to do next? Do I want to do more shelter and sanctuary? I've thought of maybe doing the 6 days of creation. I've done 2 so far. Do I want to do a series and have all 6 days with a day of rest? And not know where that show would go, but just create the work. Mm-hmm. So I do have these ideas. I'd love to illustrate a children's book someday. but how many days can I keep saying someday?
So right.
I need a sign to say, Flora, just do it. Yeah, just do it. And, you know, so there's, I'll never run out of projects.
That is the gift of a deadline.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
It does make you sit yeah. down and create yeah. to meet that deadline.
So deadlines are, it can be good.
So do you find that it's, is it more fun for you to create something that's going to be part of a competition that has some restrictions or some guidelines around it? Or is it more fun for you to come up with something completely for yourself and for your own shows?
I think both. I belong to something called the Jewish Women's Artist Network. So they come up with wonderful curatorial themes each year. Very interesting. This year it's called Song of the Land. And that's a very open theme.
Mm-hmm.
And my piece that I did, the second day of creation, Divide the Waters, was selected. So it's in, right now it's in Los Angeles at the Hebrew Union College.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So and there's going to be a catalog on it. So that, you know, I had created the piece and then entered it. So it wasn't because of the show, but now I'm thinking, you know, it made me think of some other pieces that could go into that kind of a show. So I think it's both. I think when you say the word fun, it was sometimes it can be a lot of pressure and work when you have those deadlines. You know, so.
And sometimes the pressure can take some of the fun away, and sometimes for me I find that the pressure actually, you know, helps me get more
right.
focused. And
well, when I had the show in Shelter and Sanctuary, I did create this piece. I want to make sure it was called Personal Sanctuary is the piece I did in the Decatur show. Personal Miracle was the one about the Sukkot piece in upstate
okay.
New York. So they both have the word personal in it. But because of that show, I did come up with something quite imaginative of using an old textile tablecloth that I had found at Kudzu Antiques in Decatur. It was 48 inches. It was circa 1940s. And if it was like a red checker, big red checkers, almost like checkerboard. And then in the white spaces, I created, I think there were, I don't know how many, maybe 145 or more ways that we create our sanctuary in our home when you close the door and that's private space. You know, do you read a book? Do you cook? Do you play Scrabble? Are you on your computer? Whatever you do when you lock the door, that you create that the outside world becomes, you know, it's like your inside world becomes safe. So because of that show, I created that piece. And it's that piece has been in quite a few shows. But I think it was because I had the show of Shelter and Sanctuary that I had. And that was a day of a lot of reflection or days or weeks till I came up with that idea. But when I saw the tablecloth, just walking in that was my sign. I said, that's it. I'm going to use that tablecloth. And I had never done that before.
Well, it is interesting how our ideas then build on themselves and take us down paths that we mm-hmm. wouldn't have gone had we not done the first part of that.
Right. And there was an element of risk because I wanted to draw directly on the tablecloth. And if that's risky. So I made these little index cards with white, and then I was going to collage them. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to take the risk. And Sylvia Cross, a friend of mine, a colleague, she said, take the risk. You can always cover it with the index cards if it didn't work.
That's right.
And it worked.
So backup plan.
So that was my backup plan. But that's one of my favorite pieces.
Well, it sounds fascinating. It really sounds cool. Is that on your website as well?
Yeah, it's called Personal Sanctuary. It's a red and white tablecloth piece. It's under my mixed media, I think, because it's not really a work on paper. It's a work on a tablecloth.
So share with our listeners what your website is so they can go look at that.
Okay. It's called Florage Art, FLORAGEART, oneword.com. And the word florage, by the way, was coined by someone in Binghamton, New York for my work.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I used to donate my drawings, and he said, and we're now going to give a florage to so-and-so. And then I trademarked it legally. You know, it's now my name for what I do.
Well, I love that. I think it's a great name.
It's a little tricky. I always have to spell it out.
Well, and that's always a good idea when you're sending people to a website. So is there any last comment that you would like to make to our listeners before we leave?
Well, I think art is also for the non-artists. For those of you who are listening who may not think of yourself as an artist, you know, try it. I mean, there's something it's almost like therapy. You know, it makes you feel good. It's joyful. It can be exciting. You can be any age to do it, from the child up to the senior citizen. And not to be afraid to just, the materials don't have to be expensive. And just enjoy and go look at art and go to studios and go to openings and make art a part of your life like it is part of my life, because it's very joyful.
Well, it's always fascinating to hear, you know, the stories of artists. And thank you. It's been really wonderful to have you here today. And just tell our listeners one more time how they find your website and spell it out for them.
Oh, that's very nice. It's Florage Art. And just go to www.f, like in Frank, L-O-R-A-G, like in George, E-A-R-T.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thanks to our listeners. We welcome your suggestions or comments on this or any of our shows. You can find links to all of our shows on Empower Radio and on our website, artasworship.net. Please come share your stories of art as worship on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/artasworship, or suggest an artist that we should interview. Listen in next week as we talk with another artist about their creative process and how it connects with their spiritual journey. May you have an inspired and creative week. Namaste.